I want to briefly expand a thought Matt made, and I thought he made it quite well. The book of Ecclesiastes is not an easy read. In the first chapter, Solomon, in effect, tells us that he is giving us something of a biography. I was king, I had all these privileges, all the funds, and I could do anything I wanted. His life story is he did too many of those things that he wanted. And in Ecclesiastes, as an old man, he says, I did, but I paid the price. There are some bright lights as you go through the first 11 chapters. But in large part, that little cliche that we see repeated over and over in those chapters always comes back to haunt us. Vanity of vanities, emptiness of empties, all is vanity. When you chase stuff, it always ends up empty, never fulfilling. Now, here's the old man's bio. I want to focus for just a few moments on chapter 12. What did Solomon take from his own life to share with you and me? The first chapter begins, remember now. Don't wait till you're an old man. Remember now. Whatever now is for you today is the time to do what Solomon counsels. Remember now thy Creator in the days of thy youth, while the evil days come not, nor the years draw nigh, when thou shalt say, I have no pleasure in them, in the things of God. Evil days here are not when you fall into temptation, but when age catches up with you. When the sun or the light or the moon or the stars be not darkened, nor the clouds return after the rain. When are all those things darkened? Can you turn that light brighter? I can't quite read. Your eyes begin to lose their clarity. You need brighter light to be able to read. I remember a time when I could almost read in dusk, you know, just barely a little light and I could read. That's not true now. And he goes through a whole bunch of things. In the days when the keepers of the house shall tremble. I have a familial tremor. And a lot of people face that as they get older. Not that steady surgeon's hand that never flinches. He goes through a long list. And honestly, some of the things are downright comical, but they give you incredible insight. And finally, when Solomon has gone through something of a confession, something of an acknowledgement that too much of his life was devoted to what in the end he discovered was all empty. Verses 13 and 14, 13 especially. Let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter. Sum up life. Take it all in and look at it all. What does it all mean? Do we end on empty? Is everything about life what is contained in this life? And when we breathe our last breath, it's over and that's it? That's empty. Oh, that's frighteningly empty. It's kind of fascinating, but the more I thought about it, the more I honestly like the man's thinking. I worked with a man for over 10 years, one of the brightest intellectual men I've ever known in my life. He could read a 1,000-page book and 6 months later tell you what the writer said on a certain page, and he could tell you where the page was. I envy a mind like that. I don't have one. He and a mutual friend and I were having lunch, and the mutual friend brought up religion and Christianity, and he said, as I get older, I just don't think I can buy it. My friend had never talked about his personal views of faith that much. And he looked at both of us, and especially to our mutual friend who had said, "I just can't buy it at this point." And he said, "When I look at this world and all of creation, I cannot accept that it all ends that way." Wow. Amen. Did you know Solomon in Ecclesiastes said that God has set the world in your hearts so you can't figure it all out? Yes, he did. So let's hear it. What's the bottom line to all of this? You would think after reading the first 11 chapters, this would be the last thing such a man would conclude. But he told us the truth. Fear God and keep his commandments. For this is the whole duty of man. He didn't say it's the whole duty when you're young. He didn't say it's your whole duty when you're old and getting ready to die. He said, this is the whole duty. Young, middle age, old, it doesn't matter. Prince, king on the throne, pauper in the street, it doesn't matter. This is the conclusion, the grand sum reality. Fear God and keep his commandments. I invested over 5 years and a tidy little sum at Biola for a master's degree in Christian apologetics. It's reasoning. It's somewhat of a philosophical defense of Christianity. I did it for personal reasons, and I found great blessings in the exercise. But one of the things that Christian apologists struggle with, one of the things that Christians struggle with, is this persistent, invasive, corroding problem of evil. Why is there evil? Why is there pain? Why does it appear that the bad guys come out on top and the good guys always end up on the bottom? Well, I'm not going to fuss at people who raise the question. I would encourage them to spend time with Solomon and other biblical teachings. When we struggle, what we're struggling with is, why doesn't God send a lightning bolt to evil and get rid of it right now? I can't answer why. I don't know. I'm not God. But I believe what Solomon teaches me here. For God shall bring every work into judgment, and every secret thing, whether it be good or whether it be evil. That is the last verse and the last thought of Solomon Proverbs. When you're struggling with evil, and it seems like this upside down world where evil prevails and good struggles and falters in the shadows, don't forget, God shall bring every evil work to judgment. Don't know when, don't know how. There have been times in human history when God didn't wait till the second coming and the final judgment, when he stepped in and intervened and sent immediate judgment. There are times when he doesn't, and evil prevails for a very long time. I worked in my career for over 6 months with a delightful woman, many years my senior, who grew up in the 1930s in Germany, and she was a Jew. She told me the personal experience of waking up in the morning and looking across the street from where she lived and seeing the lights out and the door open. And when she went to check, her dear friends and neighbors had disappeared in the night, never to be seen again. She'd live through that. That's not a fantasy. I get real irritated when people say the Holocaust never existed. It's just a political ploy. Yes, it existed. I've talked to people who lived it. Boy, those people have more to say, what about the problem of evil, than anybody I've ever known. And yet this lady had a delightful outlook on life. I can't tell you why God doesn't judge now, but I can assure you, my friends, that the God of this book, the God whom Solomon loved but failed to serve for much of his life, is still alive and well. And though his judgment may be delayed, it is certain it shall happen, and every evil shall be judged. I believe it's in Psalm 73. David confronts this same thing. Solomon's dad. He didn't lead the exemplary life all the time. I think he was a little closer than his son. And he said that when he looked at all the stuff going on around him, the evil, he said, when I thought on it, it was too painful. I couldn't tolerate it. I couldn't figure it out. I couldn't reconcile it. And it just about took him down. But he described a solution. Until I went into the house of God, then I understood their end. Elder Marvin Smith was a full-blood Cherokee Indian from the state of Oklahoma. I spent many happy and spiritual times with the man. He said there was a time in his life when he was struggling with this problem of evil. And right in the middle of his struggle, he stumbled across Psalm 73 and read David's words. And he said, "He gave me peace to the wicked. Go ahead. Have your fill. Do what you want to do. Live it up. But there is coming a day. And you have your day now. I'm going to have my day then." And he was happy and at peace. Rest your faith in the mercy, the kindness, and the certain judgment of your God. God bless.